Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have a very exciting founder. Oh my God, he's done it so many times that I was getting dizzy from counting all the different companies that he's built, you know, building, scaling, financing and exiting, and also doing it in different geographic locations. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Miguel Kokoric. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Alejandro. Nice to meet you. Nice to meet for everybody who is listening to us.
So originally born in Siberia, Miguel, I'm sure it was a little bit cold there. Give us a little of a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up?
Yeah, I grew up in a small village, not far from Mongolian border, in a place where actually Genghis Khan started his conquest 800 years ago. And at that time, actually, climate was colder. So quite often the temperature was minus 40 Celsius. So I was walking to my school 30 minutes with a minus 40, and then it was like now maybe walking in Dubai or Arizona. You know, it was very, very hot, very cold.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, obviously, you know, for you, you got into physics, you know, quite early on. So what developed, what got you into that?
Several reasons. First, I didn't have internet. Nobody had internet at that moment. We didn't have too many things to do because it was not like a big town. And also, I was grown up by my grandmother and grandfather. They're both teachers. And my grandmother was physics teacher, mathematics. And since childhood, I've been very excited with the physics, with astronomy, with everything that create our world. And I was a big fan of this. I was in a competition for physics many times. So I loved it.
Now, in your case, you know, like it actually, instead of like pursuing physics or what you're doing now with aerospace, you know, you went into retail and wholesale. You know, what an interesting shift there, you know, given your passion.
You know, I started in the beginning of 90s. If you remember, it's actually Soviet Union collapsed. And at once, the country didn't need like a physicist or mathematicians because it was actually a hard time. You know, it was not too much to eat, like it was a big use for the shops. It was difficult to get any money. And when I studied, it was a big choice. Either you go abroad and study and continue to work abroad, or you stay in Russia and doing something else than physics. Yeah. Or you go to the physics in Russia and basically have not enough money to support your family. This is the reason why initially I become an entrepreneur, basically just to feed myself.
Yeah, no kidding. So, and quite successfully so. So tell us, what were you doing there? What were those companies that you built, you know, while this incredible growth too of the economy was happening?
Yeah, I actually was in a university when one of the guys from mining company came and said, hey, to my professor, hey, we need to explode like several thousand tons of TNT, but need to do it so don't destroy the city. And he said, yeah, you should go to my student, this Michael. He's like a cool guy, 19 years old. So the guys came to me and said, hey, can you help us? I said, no problem. I didn't know shit how to do this. But I sit over the night, make a computer program, calculate what should be the delays when you explode this like several thousands of tons of TNT. And I bring them in a week, like the basic plan, what they need to do. And the guy saw those serious guys, you know, like from mining company, nice in Russia, you know. They said, you men come with us and see how it's going. So I come to them, like, and then we exploded this thousand tons of TNT. I was thinking, oh my God, if something go wrong, they put me under the ground immediately in the same place. Everything was good. So the guys basically took $10,000, you know, the cash, and told me, hey, thank you. So this was my starting capital. Yeah. Then I started this. My first company was building and providing services for explosives for mining and for the construction. And I was developing this company for 5 years before I sold it.
I mean, hey, you know, like not a bad outcome. You know, I guess that being able to sell the business, you know, gave you also visibility into what the journey of building, scaling, you know, and reaching the finish line looks like. You know, how was that visibility for you?
Yeah, you know, then I read this book of Sam Walton, How We Created Walmart, in the beginning of 2000, 20 years ago. I was like 25 years old boy. And I said, yeah, I want to do this. And at that time, actually, the retail market in Russia was not yet developed. So except maybe for the food, the most of the items, like electronics or, you know, the the furniture or the apparels or many, many different stuff, you actually need to buy on open markets. And you can imagine with a Russian climate how it was uncomfortable to go to buy on open markets. And I said, okay, I want to do something here. And actually, I started a retail company. Yeah, it was a journey for 8 years when I built a retail company basically from one store to hundreds of stores, from zero revenue to more than $1 billion revenue to 10,000 people. And it was like exciting times. We call it roaring 2000s, like in roaring 20s in US, when the market was growing with a double-digit numbers every year, when the whole country was built.
And then, you know, how do you end up? Because you went through different transactions there. I mean, pretty substantial, the company that you guys had built. But then all of a sudden, one thing leads to the next, and there were some mergers, some acquisitions there going on. So walk us through that too.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, with the retail, we actually merged and acquired several times in the process. I bought a couple companies, I merged with other company, and finally, in 8 years, we built one of the largest retail non-food operator in Russia, with basically close to $2 billion in revenue, with 10,000 people over the Russia, and built it without any equity. Almost without any equity investments. It was all debts. And at that moment, the interest rate was not like now. It was 25%, 25 annual. Now we say, hey, it's like this, the rate is too high, 3%, 4%, 5%. It was 25% retail. And we've been still successful in doing the stuff. So and then I've been able to sell it and pay my debts. And finally, first time in my life at that moment, I had no debts. And some money, not huge, but good enough to make different fun. Actually, I hit my middle age crisis. What are you gonna do? Yeah. So you are just 35 years old guy. You built a company with 10,000 people. You worked like a hell for 10 years. You didn't see anything. You basically I started to fly with business class when I was 30, when I already had millions of dollars. You know, so I really didn't know what to do with money at that moment. And instead of maybe going to Himalaya with some yoga or doing some stuff, I decided, okay, I want to come back. I want to come back to something that for what I was taught, yeah, for something for my childhood dreams. And I decided to build the first private aerospace company back in 2010. At that time, actually, not so many people knew about this. Yeah, and so the oldest space boom started much later. And when I first time make a meeting of the former head of the Russian space agency with Elon Musk. Actually, nobody knew Elon Musk. Yeah, I was translating him for 3 hours before the first time Dragon was docked to the ISS. Nobody knew. Only people in the industry knew him.
I mean, being also the first one there, I'm sure it was tough to be a new, kind of opening a new category there. What kind of challenges did that bring to you?
Yeah, space. In general, it was not easy market, yeah, for many reasons. First, I have this concept of the startups that need one miracle or two miracles, yeah. Even to make one miracle, it's hard. It's either the market miracle when you basically bet on some market or some product market fit or technological miracle. In space, usually it's much harder because you, in many cases, need two miracles. You need to make technological miracle because almost anything that we are doing is extremely hard from technology standpoint. But also you need market miracle, because when we started, the total size of aerospace market, of space market, was around $300 billion. But out of this $300 billion, $150 was for very traditional TV broadcasting. Yeah, it's like the boring old business. Around $100 billion was for the government programs, defense, the piloting. So for all private, actually, was a couple dozen billion dollars. For the market, for example, imaging, yeah, where people say, yeah, it's imaging, we need to reach the entire world. But the market was $2 billion, yeah, for this. The all launch market to space. You see, this is a bunch of the small companies which build this, the small launchers. The all launcher business to space is $5 to $7 billion annually. Most part of this market is taken by SpaceX, the Chinese there for China. But this is a market smaller than market of the toasters in the US. Yeah, and people bet that this market will become big one time. So you need to have second miracle. And this is the main problem for space. In space, in the most segments, the market is small, technological challenges are extremely high. In order to build something successful, it need to be very, very hard. And we see that actually over this like many years, we see very few examples of relatively successful companies. In most of the companies, it's a constant pain. Yeah, it's a pain. It's like the people build companies for years and years and years. They cannot like build something substantial. But we believe that one day some concepts can finally scale up and market is growing. But we still wait in this. We still wait in this gold rush. We still wait in when it will be this like a big application that can make this $1 trillion, you know, internet or something like this, which Elon Musk is doing. But what other will be applications? So, and I think so. Fundamentally, what we see is after the launch of the Starship, probably we will be quite close to some of the new applications, which can finally this open this like Pandora box and make this market lucrative.
I mean, in this case, only you were not only like dealing with building something from the ground up, but then also the government, you know, was not very welcoming. You know, the instability, the insecurity, uncertainty, you know, I'm sure that that was painful to deal with, because not only you're dealing with the uncertainty of building a company from nothing and dealing with that, but then now you have to deal with what's going on in the political environment. So how was that too for you?
Yeah, this was a crazy, you know, like before my current company, Destinos, I like was involved heavily in four companies in space. Yeah, Dauria Aerospace, Helios Wire, Astra Digital, and Momentus. Four companies. I would say almost all companies, from the business standpoint, from technology standpoint, from the market standpoint, was like not bad. You know, I would say so. Three of them survived till now, actually, like working great and making us a business. Dauria was closed in Russia when I left Russia for obvious reason. But what I see that out of these four companies, the only company where we had like a non-problematic exit and operating was Helios Wire, because it was registered in Canada. The Dauria Aerospace, which was in Russia, and Astra Digital and Momentus, which was in the U.S., they all had, like, for me, the problem. So the Russian government basically kicked me out of Russia because of its political position. And finally, I didn't have, like, a much more welcoming from the U.S. So nobody, like, really welcomed, you know. So comparing with what I'm doing now in Europe, it's hard. It was hard. And this was actually a big lesson, that when you are working in such a, let's say, strategically important business, yeah, like aerospace, if you are not many generation, like, local guy. These big imperial countries, it's hard countries to deal with. You know, the Russia, US, probably China also. So by actually operating in the smaller countries with less this geopolitical ambitions, but with more business ambitions, we are now operating in Switzerland, Spain, France, Netherlands. It's much easier because they're much more pragmatic. You can easily go to the government. You can easily show why you're important. They really see what you are doing. They really have a desire to understand that you are very beneficial for industry, for community. We got, like, in Spain, several grants. You know, the Spanish government gave us money to develop our technologies. We got, like, a lot of support in Switzerland, and we're getting in France. It's easier to be noticed, and in case if somebody have suspicions, it's easier to unveil these suspicions. Yeah, in the big countries, it's hard. US, DOD, this monster, they don't care.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Now, in your case too, you know, obviously one thing led to the next, you know, like you were going then, you know, in between Europe, you went to the US, you know, you ended up, you know, launching to Helios, you know, which is the one that you were alluding to, that you got registered in Canada, which had a really nice exit, you know, $25 million. But that led to, you know, what ended up becoming a pretty big success story for you. And that was with Momentus Space. So with Momentus Space, you know, also one thing that you did there that I thought it was very interesting is that you joined Y Combinator. I mean, at this point, you know, you had the you know, tons and tons of experience. I mean, you had built even a company to $2 billion in revenue, which is absolutely remarkable. So why did you find the need to join an accelerator program at this point?
It's a good question, yeah, because you give to Y Combinator 7% of the equity and something like it's only a small startup need to go. But we've been new for this investor community in the US. And even like I already lived like 5 years, maybe like 6 years by the time when I with the momentum supplied by a combinator, actually, I was not there because how are you there if you like studied in local university, if you know the local people, if your whole life, it's actually not easy. It's a pretty close community. So Y Combinator definitely allowed us to open the doors. It was not easy to get there because usually the ratio of the accepted and applied companies, it's 10 times worse than you're filing to the Harvard. It's like one out of 50 or 100 companies only accepted. So but for some reason, they accepted me. I had a good recommendations from companies in the industry. So I've been accepted. And we've been pretty successful in fundraising, raised more than 100 million very fast. And but I think in Momentus, we did two fundamental things that was important for one industry. And I think that what Momentus is still now doing, even without me, long term, it will have a lot of influence for the industry. First, we come with the first, because it's like a business model, new business model. Because before Momentus, before we started to promote this in 2017, all delivery to space was mentally, people did it as a single mode delivery. So you basically go from one point to another point. You deliver like with a one means of the transport, which never happened on Earth. You never like deliver the parcel from Europe to US with the same like a one mean of transport. You are not getting the plane which fly from the small town in Europe somewhere to small town US. No. It comes through the several modes. It's called multimodal transportation. It's multimodal transportation. And in space, it was not like this. You need to buy the whole rocket to fly to certain orbit. And this is the reason why it was so many like projects of building the stupid small rockets, kind of crazy projects. Hey, let's build small rockets, deliver to the final. So small rockets are extremely expensive. Look at the cost of the start of Falcon 9, even which is like, and it's artificially high cost because Elon Musk is monopolist. They charge $3,000 to $4,000 per kilogram. Starship technically can be less than $500 per kilogram. If you go to small rocket, for example, Relativity Space, Rocket Labs, then the cost is $50,000 per kilogram. $50,000 So it's much more expensive, like flying to business jet. But you're not flying with business jet all the time. You're flying with connecting flights. So this was the idea at the moment to say, hey, we need to actually to use a big rocket, and then we need to build something that can fly in space and basically uses in-space vehicles to make a second mode transportation. That time was crazy idea. Investors didn't understand us. So why you need this? Like, have small rockets. And now you see, now it's like hundreds of companies trying to do the same. So we basically opened like the mental, this like the people realized, okay, you can do this. And now everybody like doing this, like the what we call space tax, in space delivery. But actually, first, we actually started this and propose a whole business model and build a company around this business model. You've been asked. Second, we also realized that you need to do the different technology for the propulsion, because traditional propulsion doesn't work. You cannot use cryogenic propulsion in space for a long time because it's difficult to store cryogenic fuel, liquid oxygen or methane. And electrical propulsion are extremely slow. If you use electrical propulsion, you can only change a little bit orbits, but flying to the a big change orbit is very long. You can spend years to do this. And we come with the idea, hey, let's use something between, like a thermal propulsion, when we heat the liquid or the gas to high temperature and basically create with a solar energy, but use from chemical rockets, we expel through the nozzle, and you can use water as a fuel, and water is everywhere in space. Finally, you can get water from moon, from asteroids, because to get 1 kilogram of mass from Earth to the geostationary orbit, you need to start with 100 kilograms. So only 1% can be delivered, because we are living on the bottom of the huge gravity well. The Earth's gravity is so strong that only 1% of the initial mass can be delivered out. Can you imagine if actually the Earth would be 10-20% bigger, then the chemical rockets wouldn't be able to fly out of Earth? The space age would be probably delayed for several hundred years until people will build, some nuclear rockets. But from the moon, when you deliver something from the moon, you actually start with just double mass. So you deliver 1 kilogram, you start with 2 kilograms, not with 100 kilograms. And moon have many billion tons of water. So finally, moon is a huge future, the oil station, this oil well, where the humanity in the future will be getting this the water. And and because this is a currency, you need to do this. Yeah. And this was two things that Momentos did, and I think that's still not appreciated. It's like a two changing of mentality. Don't stick with a propellant that was used for the other applications. If you want to have industrial revolution space, your propellant should be industrial. You cannot do this like this. Xenon, you know, with argon, but need to be water. And second, it seems to be also multimodal logistics for almost everything.
Hey guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard, and already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on, when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of a cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
And, you know, in this case with Momentos too, I mean, you raised quite a bit of money. You raised $250 million. But it sounds like going public presented all types of issues, you know, for you. And in fact, you know, this ended up, you know, kind of like giving you the path, you know, to exit. So what happened there?
I mean, it was definitely not the best experience in my life, yeah. By this time, if you remember, in 2020, just coronavirus started, yeah? Initially, the first part of this coronavirus was actually hard time because everybody stopped investing. It was like a real problem, yeah? So everybody was scared that basically life has stopped, yeah? Life has stopped. And then, people see this opportunity to raise money through this, the SPAC, which instrument for some reason become popular because many people sit at home, get a lot of government money, and start to pay, you know, with the stock market. And the first, actually, space company which made IPO was Virgin, with Branson. And we supposed to be the second. We actually, filed in summer of 2020, and we plan to become public by November of 2020, and so was our schedule to become public. The problem was that for all these years, it was not easy for me to be in the U.S. In terms of my relationship with the U.S. government. Yeah, so I come with a O-1 visa, it's called Einstein visa. Yeah, Einstein visa. Now you can call it Melania Trump visa because she also has the same visa, but right. It's actually supposedly for the invest in inventors, scientists, engineers, entrepreneurs, but now everybody call it Melania Trump visa. So I come with this visa, and then after 3 years in the U.S., I decided, okay, I probably need to stay here. I probably want to stay here. So we applied for the green card in 2014, and in 2 weeks, we got approval as an extraordinary, as an individual with extraordinary ability, EB1. And then basically normal process, you need to make this the change of the status of education. So after, and then it's start to accept. Usually take 1 year, yeah, it's a change of status, so accept you. If you're not Indian, if you're Indian, you can wait for 20 years. For Russians, pretty fast because not so many Indians. So, but it's take a lot of time usually, yeah. So, but for me, it was take 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, and then 4 years. And then finally in 2018, we got a letter from UCIS saying, hey, yeah, we changed. Like in our opinion, and we think that you are not anymore qualified to be an extraordinary guy. You know? After launching dozens of satellites, after building companies, hiring hundreds of people, doing US lot of stuff, filing dozens of patents, hey, you look like not a... Just for you to say, this visa is given to the people fucking photographers. That's all, So it's plenty of people getting this visa. So, and we filed appeal, didn't come. So actually, finally, I won this legal case only after 5 years through the federal court. Yeah. So last year I got the decision from federal court of California, in California, the federal court that told that this decision was arbitrary, capricious, illegal. But I already left US, so I really don't want to come back. But at that time, I had no other reason that I applied just for asylum. Yeah. And because I've been in opposition to Putin since the beginning of 2000s, and the reason why I left Russia in 2012 was actually my active involvement in position. I filed for political asylum, and basically was waiting for this political asylum. But then, US government said, hey, this asylum guy, we don't know, he's a Russian, maybe he's bad. And finally, they basically start to, put sticks in our wheels, didn't allow us to fly and get delay with our licenses. And finally, they wrote this letter to Security Commission, said, the IPO with this guy, the CEO, possesses risk of national security because he's Russian, he comes from Russia. In Russia, had a company with Russian investors, which is strange because, yes, the company with Russian investors, sure. So. And even worse, his company was in Skolkovo, but it was in the time of Medvedev, when in Skolkovo was also Boeing, Cisco, IBM, and other companies. The Russian Silicon Valley was everybody there. And they basically thought, it was bad because he was in Skolkovo, but everybody was in Skolkovo. So at this moment, me and the board decided that we need to solve this problem. I need to leave the company. So I left as a CEO, as a board member. Finally, I sold my shares for kind of small fraction of the money that at that moment company was. And finally, company hired Undersecretary of Defense, whole board of the defense people, and finally become public already without me after half a year. So this was my story.
Wow. Very disappointing. But, at the end of the day, it's like what they say, one door closes, another one opens. And the next one that opened for you is what you're up to now, which brings you to my country, to Spain. So Destinus. So what are you guys doing with Destinus? And, walk us through what's the business model there, how are you guys making money?
After I left Momentus and I spent some time thinking what I should do after, I was I tried to do this as a kind of more or less rigorous exercise. I look for the different markets, try to understand which market have a lot of opportunity, not yet developed, so you have chances for the people who are not yet expert in this markets. A way I could have some competitive advantages. Yeah, so for example, I cannot probably come to some AI stuff because I'm not this young geek, so I cannot compete in this stuff. Yeah, so no more something real. And with this was idea, come as a pretty simple because you see finally if you're talking about transportation, ultimately it's everything about the speed. Look at the last 70 years of the progress in transportation systems, for example in trains. Trains, we started with 70 kilometers per hour, and now if you're talking about TGV, it's already 400 kilometers per hour, Spanish trains, it's 300, 400, or if you're looking about Japanese, it's even faster, or maglev, it's 500, 600 kilometers per hour. So it's improvement by order of magnitude. Yeah? In aviation, those aviation changed. Since the golden age of aviation, planes become 1,000 times more reliable, 10 times more fuel efficient, less noisy. But speed didn't change, except for the short time of the Concorde, it didn't change. And the reason was quite obvious. Yeah, the Concorde was short range, too loud, too inefficient, dirty, so it was a lot of problems. The only way to overcome this, it was logical, you need to actually fly higher. Yeah, because when you fly higher, but you need to fly faster, you have less density, and it's actually reduced exponentially. And then when you fly faster, you have less gravity losses. Yeah. You have less aerodynamic losses. So actually, you can achieve much more efficient overall energy of transportation. This is the reason why, for example, in Musk talking about even suborbital flights, yeah, for point-to-point transportation. I'm not sure that this is a solution for all cases, because, you know, you need to have like a spaceport, and still using the airports, you need to use the planes. But this is the idea. We want to build very fast planes, which eventually will use hydrogen, because this is an amazing fuel. This is a fuel of the future for high-speed transport. It's have like an extremely high heat capacity. So you can actually use the hydrogen to cool everything that is hot in your vehicle. Like kerosene, you cannot use it for this. And you can fly from Madrid to New York in an hour and a half, you know. So wow. This is our goal.
Yeah, I would love to jump on that flight, that's for sure. You know, it would definitely shorten things by a mile. And for the company, for Destinus, how much capital have you guys raised to date, Mikhail?
So we raised like 50 million Swiss francs. Yeah, because we are legally, as our headquarters in Switzerland, so Swiss francs almost the same like euro, I think 10% more than dollars. Yeah, we have 140 people. So we built and flew two of our prototypes already. We are presenting in Le Bourget, and those who will be in Le Bourget Paris Air Show in the second part of June of this year in Paris, please welcome to our tarmac. It will be in front of Airbus and Dassault, where we present two our planes which have been flying and one supersonic plane, which will be the first supersonic unmanned plane in Europe, and it will be the first supersonic plane powered by hydrogen in the history of aviation.
That's amazing. That is huge. Now, talking about huge things, let's say you were to go to sleep tonight and you wake up in a world where the vision of Destinus is finally realized. What does that world look like?
This would be a wonderful world. First, by this time, the hydrogen will become the main carrier of energy, which will be produced by any other means, with fusion, with solar, wind, you know, with all this like a geothermal energy, and then will be transported and stored in the form of the hydrogen. The most of aviation will move to the hydrogen because it's the only, the most efficient, finally, the fuel which will reduce the carbon emission to zero, basically, you know, because the only emission from the hydrogen is water. And the planes will be connecting these big mega airports, which will be probably next generation bigger airports located further from the big cities. This, we actually saw this process. For example, if you go to the DC, Washington DC, you see like in the center of the city, the Reagan airport, yeah, small one. It's flying only the local, like in US flights. There are some Europeans, but not too many. Then they build like the bigger airport, Dallas, yeah, which the bigger, larger. And in the future, it will be even larger and more remote airports. Why? Because the planes will become again more louder at the takeoff. Supersonic, hypersonic planes, suborbital, they will be loud. Yeah. So then instead of flying from basically Santa Monica in LA, you will fly from Mojave and go to Mojave with a Hyperloop or high-speed train for half an hour. Yeah. And then from Mojave, you can have 20 runways with a supersonic, hypersonic flights, with a landing through the rockets, and basically be connected with any point of the world everywhere. And then the world can be that you wake up in New York, and you have a meeting like this afternoon with your friend in Buenos Aires. You sit down on the plane, so you go to this high-speed train or high-speed hyperloop to the airport. In 1 hour, you are already in a plane flying to Buenos Aires. 1 hour and a half, you're in Buenos Aires, have a lunch, a beautiful Argentinian steak, fly back to New York, and sleep at your house.
I love it. That is absolutely unbelievable. Now, hey, we're talking about the future here. Let's talk about the past, but doing it with a lens of reflection. Let's say I was to bring you back in time. You know, maybe I bring you back in time to, you know, that moment where you are, you know, still, you know, in Russia, and you're thinking about, you know, launching a company of your own. And at that moment, you know, you have the opportunity of having a chat with your younger self, and you're able to give your younger self one piece of advice before launching a business. What would that be, and why, given what you know now?
I would tell to my younger one, learn languages. Yeah, because, you know, usually if you are talented in mathematics and physics, you will be talented in mathematics and physics. If you're not talented in mathematics, you will not be. Even if you spend 10 times more time, fuck not. I mean, this is like either with your genes, yeah? So somebody good here, somebody good there, we're all different, it's okay. If like I born good in physics, if somebody born not good in physics, even if you spend 100 times per time, you will not be good in physics, yeah? The same, if I cannot paint, I will not be able to paint, even if I spend like 100 years to do this, yeah? But languages, everybody should know, because this is the way how we interact, even with AI, it still will be. So spend time with languages. It was actually a big setback for me because I didn't speak English. I didn't speak languages. I spent like 10 years actually to switch so I can start like my international business. So first. Second, get a good boss. Get a good boss. You know, you should, not the company boss. In every human life, in every like professional life, at some moment of your life, it was somebody who actually was the role for you, for whom you kind of copy, all monkey, you know, we copy others. If you have a good boss with whom you work like 5-10 years, and you can something imitate and mimic this guy and work with him, this is incredibly important. Don't start to start your own company early on. You're not fucking Zuckerberg. You're not fucking like these guys. It's exceptions. The best age to start a new company is 40 years. Before, it's only like what we call this selection bias. You see these guys because they are successful, but for these guys, it's thousands of people, millions of people who was unsuccessful, very painful. They lost the time. They lost like they never been able to get the experience. They become like, look in the Silicon Valley, half of these people actually, it's miserable life. Don't try to start a company early on. Get a good boss, work for somebody. Work for somebody for whom you can teach, from whom you can learn. And then when you learn, when you know the stuff, then you can start your company. Then you understand the stuff. And then in 30 years, you should start to think about this. 40 years, you can start to do it if you want to do it. Or maybe by this time, you already run as a company. Yeah, and when you start entrepreneur, this is several things that is very very important. Like I would say, the incredibly important to have like a value of the people you need to, because finally company is a reflection of yourself and your values. This is like will be the world. You hire people, you fire people, then you pick people whom you like, and then it will be a reflection of your. You don't need to be afraid to fire people. If people is not good, if some reason people don't like, it should be easier. It should be easier to fire than hire. People are afraid to fire. They shouldn't be afraid to fire. Let people go. If it's not people, I had like in my memories, my one of the first company had a guy who actually was playing the computer games all the time. It's kind of, no. And then he basically told him, yeah, his name was Sergey, no, not Brin, another Sergey. I said, Sergey, you know, I think it's like what we are doing is not for you. You should do something else. You just like, you know, you should like go and find something. So I basically fired him. And he became founder of the second largest game company in Russia at the time, was multi-hundred-million-dollar company. Extremely successful guy. And then we met him and said, no, this was the right decision. You fired me. And actually, this is the one when I started my company, when I started to sing, because I had this passion for the games, I started doing it by myself. And then like, for many years, I finally built a big company. It's a very famous company. Everybody played. I wouldn't say the name of this company, but many people know this company. Yeah. And don't afraid to fire. And also the second, be careful with your equity. Yeah. If you give equity too early with a too low valuation to some investors, you know, at some moment you will lose your motivation, because when you especially because you don't know how fast you find your product market, be careful with equity. If you can do something without raising money, do without raising money. If you raise money, raise at high valuation. Don't listen to the people who say, hey, you need to raise from good investors. It's fucking bullshit. The good thing that investors can do, give money and go away. Yeah? This is a good thing. Doesn't matter. Money doesn't smell, you know. Get a good valuation. Do your stuff. You know, the investors will never help you. They can only mess. It's like people also never say, oh, investors are very important. It's like, no, it's not true. The only thing that is important then to bring another money, yeah, to get introduction. This is good. But in many cases, most of the cases, investors start to influence the business. It means that there's some problem. Yeah, yeah. There's some problem in the business.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Miguel, those are incredible nuggets. They're very profound. I guess for the people that are listening, that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
To me? Yeah, LinkedIn. LinkedIn, I'm not promising that I'm answering fast, but, you know, for sure, if it's like something that it makes sense for both of us, I usually answer pretty fast. Yeah, so LinkedIn is a good way to reach to me. Yeah, or follow also like on a Twitter and reach on Twitter. Now like on Twitter, soon it will be like also almost like Telegram. You can exchange with Elon Musk, do an incredible job for the Twitter. Should be a good platform very soon.
Amazing. Well, hey, Miguel, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today. It has been an honor to have you with us.
Thank you, Alejandro. And thank you, everybody.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.